जेमा द लाइव डिवाइन इज ए स्टोरी बुक, अ मोस्ट वंडरफुल स्टोरी बुक. द ओनली थिंग इज दैट इट्स ए स्टोरी बुक अबाउट द इन्फिनिट एंड रिटन बाय द इन्फिनिट एंड वी आर फाइनाइट क्रीचर्स एक्सप्लोरिंग दिस वंडरफुल स्टोरी. सो द स्टोरी बिगिन्स विद एस्पिरेशन. And this aspiration in the human mind takes the form of quest. This quest is based on ever-changing appearances of the world, finite, everything is finite, limited. And there is in us a quest for the limitless. This is the bug, divine bug, which bites everyone. We want limitless. Dil mange more. So, but everything is finite. So man started searching. Where does it end, if it ends at all, or where does it begin? From where does it come from? And in this quest, reason came with its two arms, philosophy and science. And they started probing matter, which is the only sensible product right with us. And as they probed matter based on the data given by the senses and the analysis of the mind, with its probe and measuring rod, it went deep and deep and deep, studying the laws of creation, material creation. And they found, wow, this is wonderful. Fixed laws, easy to understand, easy to read, easy to draw conclusions from, and easy to replicate, easy to use practically, till they entered a land of the lawless. That land of the lawless is the infinitesimal particles. They were not following any law. It is a chaos. And so, that's where it landed. A kind of lawless land whose laws they have tried to understand how they operate. They are still doing. It's wonderful. But then, where does the last infinitesimal particle end? Every time they say, now we got it. And every time they discover, now we didn't get it. Because there is always, you break the smallest particle, it will still break into still smaller pieces for the simple reason that it is infinite. So even this piece of paper, if one picks up a piece of paper and starts slicing it down to the smallest particle, still you can slice it. So though it's a finite paper with a finite size, but potentially it is infinite. That's what they discovered. So it was very strange. So after some time, mind gets giddy and dizzy. So they said, that's an unknowable. Let's not bother about it. Let's bother about this that we can handle. So it's an infinite void or a void. Some call it infinite, some say void. Either ways. And that's where they have stopped. But they are seeing that space, time, everything is expanding, unrolling, etc., etc. Philosophy also proceeds on its own basis, in its own way, and it reaches the doors of the unknowable because its instrument is reason. Yoga takes a very bold leap. It proceeds on the basis of faith and intuition. It says, why should I use only reason? So there is a faith that there is a divine reality. Not divine, well, there is a reality, a source. Even an intuitive logic tells us that there has to be a source, an origin from which everything has emerged. So they picked up this faith and intuition, and by the power of concentration, they started at another end, not with matter, but with mind. Where does the mind come from? So they started moving in another direction in their quest. And as they went further and further and further, they discovered that mind itself is a world. Or world beyond worlds, subtle worlds. They discovered, because mind is a subtle substance. Now, we are on the verge of discovering. But then they discovered and they went to the farthest layer of the mind. And there they discovered, they discover two sides of one reality. If they went one way, they discovered Nirgun. There is a land where it's not just formless, but without qualities, without anything. And then the Sagun, where there are the home of all the qualities. What is beyond it? Quite naturally. So when they tried to go beyond it, it's the absolute of which we may say nothing in this world, nothing which is beyond, nothing can describe it. So it is neti neti. But equally they discovered that that absolute reality is in everything, everywhere, everything has come out of it, is sustained by it, dwells within it, is supported by it. So we can equally say iti iti. It is this, it is this, it is this. So that's where they also stopped at the doors of the unknowable. Why? Because if you enter into that domain, mind cannot enter. Mind is finite. So mind has reached a point where it cannot enter. That's the story of Kain Upanishad, where when Indra chases the infinite and the eternal, ultimately he cannot find, it disappears. Then Uma Himvati, the divine mother, comes and says, you know what, you can't find him. It is the eternal who had manifested himself. That story is wonderful. I think I have shared it number of times. So mind cannot reach it. So mind came back with this report. You know what? There is a reality, absolute, ineffable. We cannot describe it. We cannot speak about it. Speech cannot enter. Thought cannot reach. This is the language they have used. But you can enter into it. But if you enter, you can't come back. That there was a hurried glimpse. This is tremendous. If you get into it, you cannot come back. And that's what Sri Ramakrishna says. That if you enter into that, walk that edge. Haha kore gire pode. Gone. You can't come back to say anything. And there is another description in one of the Upanishads. When you reach that point, what do you say? You are beyond, it's beyond expression. So you say, ha ha, hoo hoo. That's how it describes. It's beyond any description. Someone has to go inside. But the moment you go, as Kabir says, everything is burnt off. You just can't go. It's the door. So some yogis have lingered at that door. They have helped mankind that, look here, you know, this is our discovery. Like scientists speak of their discovery. You want to come? We can help you come. But after their work is over, they enter into that, never to return. But one returned. One returned. We know the story of Sri Aurobindo, that Bama Khepa, the great yogi of now Bangladesh. So when his disciple asked him, we have heard about Sri Aurobindo, he is engaged in a great yoga. Can you tell us something about him? So he says, Bishtha mukh mein rakhne wala, tu sunna chahta hai unka naam. Your mouth is full of dirt and you are uttering his name, Sri Aurobindo's name. I have seen him go beyond the gates of the sun, from where none returns. He has seen him actually. And he doesn't know how he has come back. And then Sri Aurobindo was asked about this in evening talks. He says, yes, yes, he saw me pass. He didn't see me come back. So let's understand that though Sri Aurobindo is speaking in rational terms for our satisfaction, Sri Aurobindo is saying pure, everything is based on his realizations. So it's not like an intellectual logical exercise that he's engaged in. So what is it that he has discovered? Going there where none has gone. People have lingered on the gates, beyond it's the absolute. And Sri Aurobindo writes very beautifully. They saw the light, tremendous light. Jyotir Brahman. So it was like it is featureless. There is nothing except that tremendous light. That's how it is described. Satyam, Anantam, Jnanam, Jyotir Brahman. That's how they have described with these terms. But Sri Aurobindo says something very interesting. This infinite light is not a blankness. There is someone hiding there. See, that's how Divine Mother he describes. Someone came infinite and absolute. So he went and he discovers. So what are the discoveries he states to us? First discovery is the same discovery which the Vedic rishis made, the rishis of the Upanishad, that there is indeed a fundamental reality. That reality is absolute, and that reality is in everything. That reality is outside, that reality is above, below. Like if you ask somebody living in the sea, tell me about the sea. So what will he say? Within me, sea is there. Above me, sea is there. Outside me, sea is there. Below me, sea is there. All around, sea is there. But don't ask me about the sea. I cannot describe the sea. You know, tade jati, tanne jati, taddure, tadvantike. So he says that yes, this is true. So that reality is called as Brahman. Brahman is the name given to that ultimate reality, which is beyond, which is in cosmos, which is in every element of creation, all around. There is nothing else except Brahman. Then what are these finite forms? Well, it is Maya which comes in, builds names and forms for the Brahman to enter into them. Now, how does Maya come? There are two. The ancient Vedic rishis accepted that this is the Maya of Brahman. But they could not know the purpose. Why she is? I mean, they guessed it or sort of surmised it intuitively, but they did not finally, you know, they had these hints, intuitive sense, why these forms and names. But in the later yoga, especially in the times of the Upanishads, it got lost. Vedic yoga is integral, Vedas. But in the Upanishad, meditation, inner self, and go back to Brahman, form and name are a delusion, illusion. All this came later on. This is not original Vedic Rishi's yoga. This is the Vedanta, which is much more prominent, easy to handle, easy to understand. So in Vedanta, it's like, forms and names are there, Maya, but we don't know. We don't care about how Maya came into existence. But it is an illusion maker because forms and names. Reality is the Brahman, which is the indwelling universal. Why are you bothered why forms and names came into existence? So it was like if a student asked too many questions, why are you asking such questions? Be focused on what is given in the textbook and the class. So ultimately, this remained buried in the human depths. And people found the road to liberation. Get free of form and name, enter into Brahman, the ultimate reality. You know the famous song of Kabir where he says, Matki phuti re phuti. Main paniya bharan se chuti re. So he says that, you know, I am so happy that my matki, matki is the physical. So he says, ki why you are afraid of death? Meri matki phuti, phut gai meri gagri. And the good part is, he says, that main paniya bharan se chuti re. I don't have to come back to life and fetch water again and again. This became the standard thought that, well, this is Maya, illusion, delusion, get rid of it. Okay. Obviously unanswered questions. This Brahman reveals to that query as the self of all things, essence. Bulla ke jana mein kaun? He says, na, ki I am in everything. So it reveals itself as an essence. So that's where it is the self. It is the individual self, cosmic self, everywhere. Self of all creatures. But it's one. So there is nothing like an individual self is because you are closed in that gagri. You think this is mine, but actually there is nothing like an individual self. So Advaita Vedanta discards in the last analysis that there is anything like an individual self. Though there are schools of Vedanta, we will not go into it, Dvaita Dvaita and Dvaitvad and Visishta Dvait, but we will not go in. But ultimately they end up with wave and the ocean analogy and all that. So we will not enter into that. Then another way that the same reality reveals itself, not just as the Atman of everything and every creature, but it reveals itself in the duality of Purusha and Prakriti. So Mr. Purusha is the one who stands behind as the cosmic being, and all nature is somewhere somehow again. His mechanical movement which is going on, God knows since when, or perhaps he too would know because there is no God in Sankhya. It's going on and on and on and on. But then there are sentient beings, there are at least creatures who are little conscious, they have thought, feelings. Where do they come from? The light of the Purusha falls upon nature, Prakriti, and therefore Prakriti becomes conscious and moves according to that. And it discovered the three poises. The Purusha can be fully involved inside. That's the story actually of Narcissus, which has been misinterpreted in different ways. But Narcissus looks at its own shadow and is so fascinated, shadow, no, reflection, in the lake. And he's supposed to be very beautiful. Narcissus and Goldmoor. There's a whole novel on this. So he is so fascinated that he doesn't want to get up. He loves himself. And people are coming and telling him, what are you doing? Come, you have to eat. No, I love this image. Till he finally drowns into it. Because he is fascinated by this image. So Purusha can be completely drowned and submerged by Prakriti. It becomes Anish. It loses its own light. Or it can remain like a student. What is this mirror in which my reflection is coming? Or it can become Ish, master, when he listens to Goldmoor and comes back and says, I think, this is a reflection, too deadly, dangerous. I am getting into it. So these are the three poises of the Purusha and Prakriti, three kinds of relation, Shobindu says, of great pragmatic importance. Because if we don't learn to step back and adopt a witness attitude, then we will forever remain submerged by Prakriti. Forever means there is a mechanism, but that's later on. We'll remain submerged and we'll think this is me. This body is myself. This degree, qualification, you know, people who carry that, what is it called? Visiting card. So we have a story of somebody sent to Anandamayi Ma visiting card through her secretary. So there were too many degrees written there. MBBS, MD, MLit, DLit, God knows all the things. FRCP, MRCP. So he couldn't read so many things. He says, Ma, ye koi vidwan aaya hai. Mille. Too many degrees. So he's a vidwan. So her remark was, Avidya ki nagri mein vidwan kahan se a gaya? Who is this man of knowledge in this city of ignorance? But that's the identification. I am a doctor, I am a philosopher, I am a nobody, I am a useless person. These are all tamogun se identity, then I am nobody, worthless, useless. Rajogun, I am somebody. Sattugun, perhaps I am something or somebody, but others are also, you know, have to. So this is how one moves in that cycle. And a time comes when the Purusha says, "Arey, this is not me. Something else." So he turns back. Then he becomes free. And then he becomes these till he is there, till it can become a sanctioner of nature, Anumanta. This has been known. Sri Aurobindo confirms these experiences because he has had them. He says, yes, this is true, but it doesn't solve the riddle of the individual purpose of creation. What is Maya doing? All this remains unanswered. And here he comes after entering into the absolute, the transcendent. He reports to us. See, he is a journalist reporting, but divine journalist. He says, you know what? There is beyond these two, the Ishwara and his Shakti. And within Ishwara and Shakti, Nirguna and Saguna Brahma, Purusha and Prakriti, all of them find their ultimate there. That is also Brahman, if we take the ultimate way that Brahman is everything everywhere. But it takes the poise of Ishwara and Shakti. This is Sri Krishna's discovery where he hints that my para Prakriti, I am the womb of all creatures. Visargaha, creation is a release. All these are wonderful terms. So he discovers Ishwara and Shakti, and there he discovers the secret of creation. So creation is not just an imposition by Maya, somehow it has come into being, we are trapped, it's a delusion, illusion. We are all portions of the absolute infinite one as the Ishwara and Shakti. We are their children. And it is Shakti who has become, who takes the aspect of Maya. It is Shakti who takes the aspect of Prakriti. Where does Prakriti get her power from? But in Prakriti, it limits itself. It's like a person who has maybe any amount of wealth. So he will give only a limited portion based on your requirement. So around this prakriti, which is called as apara prakriti, the lower nature, the nature of ignorance in which we are caught, caught with a purpose, that's the journey. Around it is aditi. So this is diti, the division, the nature of division and ignorance. Around it is aditi, the indivisible infinite consciousness. See, pressures on prakriti and gives only that much that the creatures need. She provides for everybody. It's a tremendous conclusion comes here. So if I just want only roti kapda makan, maybe with bibi bachcha dukan, that's all we will get. We may curse God. You are infinite, but you are not giving me endless power. No. Your knowledge and capacity will be limited, and limited delight, because that's my requirement. So she will provide that much. But as a time comes through the cycle of rebirth that we begin to start sensing the warmth of the Aditi, the infinite mother, just like a tree emerges from the seed and starts stepping out, and we develop a thirst for the infinite, for infinite love, for infinite bliss, for infinite knowledge, for infinite peace. And that's the time that the doors begin to open of infinite knowledge pouring upon us in radiant streams. Now see, the journey of aspiration, quest of mind ultimately takes that route. The door opens and there is the outpouring of infinite knowledge. And that is the knowledge by which all can be known. Just imagine, that's the knowledge. There is a pouring in of infinite power. There is a pouring in of infinite delight. There is only one last problem. That now the doors are open and now infinity is pouring itself. But are we ready to receive? Our instruments are made by lower nature. They are not capable. Brain breaks down. Trying to become supramental, we become inframental. So that is a problem. Now we understand how Shrivindu's yoga so perfectly goes into it. So we have to, instruments of lower nature, first the inner consciousness must be ready to receive through aspiration. If we aspire, then only. Otherwise, it's not automatic. It's not like just because, I come and start living here, automatically something will happen. Something will happen. Well, something is always happening. Doesn't matter. But if I aspire and surrender, instead of surrendering to my ego, I surrender to the Divine Mother, then there will be a time will come when the door will open and the inner consciousness begins to undergo a change. But inner being can receive, but the outer physical instrument are not capable. So the brain has to become ready. The heart has to become ready. The life force has to become ready and the very body has to become ready. So how they become ready? First, it descends through the brain, because this is where the seat of consciousness is. So simple way to make the brain ready is to read the Life Divine and Shrivindu's writings. That's what Mother says, that it creates new brain cells for the understanding. So literally she says. So when we do that, the brain begins to, it's not about, how it will be helpful for me in everyday life. That's a pure utilitarian way. It doesn't work. By reading, my brain becomes ready to receive that light. It becomes supple. It becomes wide, straining, trying. Why did Sri Aurobindo write in a difficult language? Apparently. Precisely to give the brain little exercise. We want kunji. Points. 1, 2, 3, 4. Somebody once told me, sir, ye talk thi ke aap toda bullet points mein bana dijiye. ऐसे नहीं होता ऐसे नहीं नहीं कर सकता मैं. इट्स एन ओशियन. इट विल पोर एंड स्पीक द वे इट वॉन्ट्स टू स्पीक. आई कांट स्टार्ट पुटिंग ओके पेपर लिख करके प्रेजेंट कर दीजिए ना. वो भी नहीं होगा. दीज आर मेंटल एक्सरसाइजेस. सो दैट्स व्हाई स्कॉलरली विजडम हैज नथिंग टू डू विद दिस आउटपोरिंग. सो दैट्स वेयर द ब्रेन हैज टू बिकम रेडी टू रिसीव. Heart has to become ready to receive. How will it receive? It lives in the sense of me and my family.
No.
It has to become wide, large. That's what is happening today, we see. How will life become ready if it's caught up in the trap of desires, which are desire for what? Small little things. If I get this, if I get that, if I get this food, if I get this dress, if I get this house, if I get this car. It becomes small. Desires limit us. Ambition limits us. So it has to come out of that and seek the divine. Through divine service, the life becomes ready. Why? Because we are at the service of the infinite. So life becomes vast and the divine power can pour into it. And eventually the body itself, again through service, begins to become ready for the change. This is the yoga of transformation. That means the individual, which according to Sankhya, there is multiple individualities, but they are in again a kind of in nature, because nature is constantly moving, there is a sense of individuality. Eventually there is only one Purusha. Or if we take the Brahman and Maya, pure Advaita Vedanta, there is no individual. It's only a practical thing. I used to say, then why you are seeking freedom? Who is seeking freedom? There is no individual. If you take Dvaita Advaita or Visishta Advaita, even there, individuality is only like the wave coming out of the sea for a moment, then it goes back. So ultimately, if you go deep within, same thing you take Buddhism. So now the question of questions is, if there is no real truth of mine, then who is doing the yoga? And why does one do the yoga? Who is caught in the cycle of rebirth? These are real questions. We use the word soul, but if we go into its depths, it's all the sense of individual because of the play of the Maya. It keeps on moving from one form to another. What keeps on moving? That's we have that little portion and it keeps on moving. But actually, this portion is unfortunately trapped in the form. And it has to keep moving till one day this portion realizes, actually, you know, there is no such thing as a separate portion. It is one with the Lord. Very nice all. But there is a truth of spiritual individuality in the supramental, transcendent absolute. That's where our souls have come. We had read about this last time. But here we'll read this part of the Life Divine. Page 373. Here it becomes opportune to see how in this aspect of the reality, Ishwara and Shakti, this aspect, we must regard the relation we have discovered between the one and the many. In Vedanta, it is illusion that it feels it is separate, but in reality it is not separate. So the logic is, get back into that. And when you get back into that, you discover I am that. That's it. End of the story. In Purusha and Prakriti, again you are caught. You have to get back into that Purusha consciousness, and there is no again. It's pure universal intelligence. Almost at the end of it, it sounds like God has cheated you. At least that was my impression after reading all this. I said, I am an individual or I am not. I need to know this. Who put me here? Because then only you put your effort and everything. So I felt that if this is all, then it's a cheat. Somebody cheated me. But why? And now says, okay, a few people I'll pull out. But why? Who put me here? By whose mistake? As once somebody, Amitabh Bachchan, asked his father, Dad, whose mistake it is that I am here? His father got alarmed. He said, tomorrow I'll answer you. He kept thinking. Next day he says, you know what? I thought a lot about it. By whose mistake you are here? And I discovered that I am also a mistake of my parents. And my parents are a mistake of their parents. But then, as we read yesterday, there is a truth to know, a work to do. So that he is revealing to us the relation of the one and the many. This amounts to a determination of the true connection between the individual and the divine being, between the soul and the Ishvara. In the normal theistic conception, the many are created by God, made by Him as a potter might make a vessel. They are dependent on Him as are creatures on their creator. That's how it is. He has put us, and then after some time, Gagri, the pot, clay pot, breaks. It goes into another pot till one day, okay, enough, journey, come back. So that's how it. But in this larger view of the Ishvara, again, this Ishvara is not the Sagun Brahman, as we read yesterday. This Ishvara is not the Purusha of the Sankhya. This Ishvara is beyond these. It's not the Ishvara as the Godheads that, you know, everybody calls their God as Ishvara. That's okay. Everybody is free. But this Ishvara is neither the Sagun Brahman nor the personal deity of theistic thought. So he says, but in this larger view of the Ishvara, the many are themselves the divine one in their inmost reality. See how he is reconciling this truth that I am that with something else. Individual selves of the supreme and universal self-existence. Eternal as he is eternal, but eternal in his being. Our material existence is indeed a creation of nature, but the soul is an immortal portion of the divinity, and behind it is the divine self in the natural creature. So that's how it is. Each of us is, we can say, always, eternally, an immortal portion of the Divine Mother. It is. Even if creation were to vanish, pralaya came, mahapralaya came, still these two will always remain. Of course, if it wants to say, ki I quit the game, she will take it in. That's okay. That's a choice always there. But there is a reason why it has come forward, put forth, because the one wants to become many. Manifest his infinity through finite forms and names. That's how you can manifest. Very simple. If you look at Vyasa as a whole, Mahabharata and Sri Krishna within his inner space, but to manifest he needs finite characters. So each is a portion of the Divine Mother, but is here to manifest. So that's what he's describing. Individual selves of the supreme and universal self-existence. Eternal as he is eternal. But the soul is an immortal portion of the divinity, and behind it is the divine self in the natural creature. This is the image of Sri Krishna and Arjun. Nar Narayan. So the Nar is in front, the instrumental, and Narayan is behind, always guiding together. This is the image. On Karma Yogi, the journal Sri Aurobindo brought out, one of the four journals. So always you will see the image of Sri Krishna and Arjun. This is the image of Nar, the in front, and Narayan. Together they conquer the battles. That's how the story is. And very interesting two stories are there with regard to it. That they have fought the wars. Imagine, Narayan, he can fight alone. This is a meaning. Why Nar and Narayan must come together and fight? And in Badrinath, there is a legend that there are two mountains. I am forgetting the name. One is Nar and the other is Narayan. And they say both are doing tapasya. And they are slowly inching closer. The day they meet, that day there will be the reign of truth upon earth. Just imagine, Nar and Narayan must become one. But without losing into each other. That's why. That is the beauty. That consciously the soul becomes the portion of the, knows itself as portion of the divine. Still, the one is the fundamental truth of existence. The many exist by the one. And there is therefore an entire dependence of the manifested being on the Ishvara. From there comes the logic of surrender. Because instead of, anyways, you know, people who don't like this, that no, I don't want to depend. But you are depending on everybody. You go and buy something from shop, you are depending on that fellow. You are depending on the farmer who has made it, nothing, this inability to surrender is nothing but ego, but very difficult to, you know, accept it. You're depending on everyone. You're depending on your wife to make a cup of tea. But when it comes to divine, no, I'll follow my way. It's nothing but arrogant ego. It doesn't require much to look into it. But in reality, the soul is always dependent on the Ishvara. They are together. But it has been brought forth for a purpose in the play. So to depend. In fact, Sri Aurobindo says, the soul, the individual soul goes to the Divine Mother in all its trouble and difficulties, and the Divine Mother wants it to be so that she can pour her heart of love on the creature. What gives a mother maximum joy? When the child comes and says, Mama, please make this dish which I love. But if he comes home and says, I am having Maggie. Mothers, poor mothers, they don't know. The child does not know. She is getting a great joy in doing all this. So this is where this togetherness exists. And Sri Aurobindo even says, just as the soul takes joy in the divine takes joy in the soul. We are his santan. It's not like he says, okay, come back, merge into me. I'll go, every soul should go back into that state of oneness. Then there was no need of creation. There is a joy in their relationship. And so much so that, you know, there are stories there that whom does the divine meditate upon? And the answer is meditates upon his bhakta. Shobindu says very close to that something in Synthesis of Yoga. Nothing is denied to the God lover, for he is indeed the self of the beloved. For the soul, he is the beloved. But ask the beloved, he'll say, he is myself. See, what a beautiful relation. Even to taste that relation is so joy. Delight multiplies. When you are alone, you may be very happy. But when there are two, the Upanishad says, ekaki na ramyate. When there are two, the joy is more. Unfortunately, at human level, it doesn't work for long. But that's why the creation came into existence, to take delight of multiplicity. So the one and the many. This dependence is concealed by the separative ignorance of the ego, which strives to exist in its own right. Although at every step, it is evidently dependent on the cosmic power. It doesn't like to call God. Huh? God gets too personal. Close for comfort. Cosmic power is something impersonal. At the most. So, but it is dependent. If you look at it, our very breath is dependent on the cosmic power. We cannot breathe. Imagine if one day Pavan says that I am not going to flow. As he did when he got annoyed, Pavan Dev, when, you know, Hanuman is hit by the gods. He's, okay, I cease my work. All the gods are threatened. Creation stops. So our very breath, heartbeat, everything is dependent on that. So, but we don't admit that's the ignorant ego. Moved by it, a part of its cosmic being and action. The individual soul is a part of the cause, is moved by it. That's why Shri Krishna says, what does he speak about the individual soul? He says, Mama Evansha. And it's so powerful, this is invigorating. That each soul is my Ansha. That's the only card we should carry. What's your surname? We can't say Yadav because, well, some people say we are Krishna's Vanshaj. Why? Because we are Yadav. So you have to tell them, you know, Krishna destroyed all the Yadavs before he went. Because he realized. But each soul is the Ansha of the... Each of us is a portion of the Divine Mother. What a beautiful knowledge this is. This effort of the ego is clearly a misprision, an erroneous reflection of the truth of the self-existence that is within us. This is the illusion we have to get rid of. But why it has been made, that Sri Aurobindo has described and will continue to describe. We'll not go into that right now. We have touched upon it because we have to become ready. Otherwise, in the beginning, when it is just a little spark, we are not ready. So we have to take the challenges, take the effort. Like a mother sends the child to school, where, you know, he has to go through the challenges. People think that school is not, you know, it's all digital knowledge. But, you know, school is not about information and knowledge you have everywhere now. School is about learning to interact, learning to grow. This is the beauty of school, where we grow organically in many ways. School is not just a classroom. So that's why the school of nature is allowed for the I'm separative individuality, because you go to school, your mama, papa are not there. What do you do? You have to figure out. You may cry, some good teacher may tell you, but another equally good teacher may say, no, no, don't cry. You become quiet. So basically through all this experience, it is to grow, bring out its own potential. But there are many more things ultimately why it is separative ego. At one place mother says, man believes he is a separate ego, and he has succeeded in completely separating himself from the divine side. There is no separation ever, but man has, by all his beliefs, there is no divine. He starts from there. Then come, there is divine, but all as Brahman, I can't connect. Then there are people who say, you know, oh, it is so difficult to find the divine. Actually, it is the easiest. Because he is the very stuff of our being. He is there in breath, flows in the nostril. He is there in the heartbeat. He is right there. But man has succeeded. Oh, you have to do a great inner journey before you can, you know, reach. And now, the way philosophically we present supermind, so people say, oh my God, divine is too far. So you have to remind, but supermind is also in the heart. That's Shubhendu's thing. That so he says, it is true that there is something in us, not in the ego, but in the self and inmost being, that surpasses cosmic nature and belongs to the transcendence. The psychic being belongs to the transcendence. It does not belong to the cosmic being. That's why even the gods, if there is a developed psychic being, even the gods listen. There are so many stories where the gods had to obey, listen, because, you know, when there is a developed psychic being, there are instances where they have even gone and quarreled with the gods, and gods have all, my God, they say, this little fellow has come straight from there, transcendent. That surpasses cosmic nature and belongs to the transcendence. But this too finds itself independent of nature only by dependence on a higher reality. You want to be free from the clutch of lower nature? Try whatever effort one wants. At the end, you will say, Mother, you only can make me free. But one has to do this part. You'll reach a point where ultimately, when one is most helpless, one is closest to the divine power. Because when you are most helpless, what do? Mama, mama, you have no choice. But then you do with that intensity because you know. So, it can only discover freedom from nature by its dependence on the divine mother. On a higher reality. That is philosophical language Shubhendu is using. It is through self-giving or surrender of soul and nature to the divine being that we can attain to our highest self and supreme reality. For it is the divine being who is that highest self and that supreme reality, and we are self-existent and eternal only in his eternity and by his self-existence. Here comes the logic of surrender. Not just surrender, complete self-giving. The more we give, and we see letters of Sri Aurobindo, what technique method he is saying. He is saying, give yourself. The more completely you give, the faster you will go. Because the more, of course, preparing the instrument, then the divine power has to act, which will take time. It will start cleaning. That cleansing will be there, subconscious, but self-giving is the key. And the logic is this, because that's the relation that exists between the individual soul, which is an eternal portion, and the divine himself. It's always there, and it comes from the transcendent. It's not part of the cosmic creation. It's not part of creation of Maya. That he makes it very clear. This dependence is not contradictory of the identity, but is itself the door to the realization of the identity. So people will say, yes, yes, in the beginning you have to do this, but when you discover soham asmi, I am that, then this ceases. Shrivindra is saying, no. They can be always together in a joyous fulfillment. This is a great sayujya, samipya, salokya, sadharm. These are the four muktis in Shrivindra's yoga. Sayujya, individual soul is always in identity with the divine without losing itself. Salokya, that it is of the same status as the divine. Samipya, and that's why when such a soul says the divine's word is there, tathastu. Samipya, it is always near to the divine. And sadharma, its nature becomes the nature of the divine. That's what we are here to become. Not lose ourselves entirely in the divine. That's one option which has been exercised, but this is the original option which Sri Aurobindo is. And then it makes sense of the whole journey. That while being always in a state of identity with the divine, yet without losing ourselves to become a manifesting channel for the divine works. So this dependence is not contradictory of the identity, but is itself the door to the realization of the identity. So that here again we meet that phenomena of duality expressing unity. Proceeding from unity and going back into unity, which is the constant secret and fundamental operation of the universe. It is this truth of the consciousness of the infinite that creates the possibility of all relations between the many and the one. How we'll relate to him? As every way. Shobinda speaks of it, discipleship to God the Master, sonship to God the Father, child of the Divine Mother, clasp of the hand of the friend and playmate, and the love of the paramour and beloved, all these relations. He says, and if you can realize in this human body, then you have the greatest delight which is denied even to the emancipation of the Advaitin. Because you realize that delight in its manifold way. So it comes from there. All possible relation. Not only of guru as in traditional yoga. But mother, father, friend, beloved. He even becomes a child of our desires. Whom you nourish, nurture. You see when people, what? You said something about Sri Aurobindo. He's like a child. Something in you wakes up. And he enjoys it. Because that is also a relation. It is described in our literature. Only they don't say what is the reason why all this is there. And yet it does not annul. Okay. Among which the realization of oneness by the mind. So the mind grows full of the divine. The presence of oneness in the heart. Heart is full of the divine love. The existence of oneness in all the members is the highest peak, sadharma gati. This transformation, divine in the blood, divine in the nerves, divine flowing through the breath, through heartbeat, divine beating in us, divine flowing in the limbs. Now see, divine in every cell, that is transformation. And Shobinda is hinting it here. That is why this creation has been made. So utter unity. And yet it does not annul but confirms all the other personal relations and gives them their fullness, their complete delight, their entire significance. This too is the magic but also the logic of the infinite. That's why our souls have come here. Not just for annulling, because it makes no sense of the journey. They've been brought forth because of the one becoming the many. The origin of our souls, our home is in the supermind. And from there it has entered into creation for a particular purpose. As a little spark, it grows from life to life, becomes a psychic being, a passenger from life to life, from scale to scale. It regards the icon growing by its gaze and in the worm foresees the coming God. So that's it. We'll close with these two passages from Savitri. Originally I had thought of one passage. Now the other has come. Just small little passages. Above the stretch and blaze of cosmic sight. It's about a soul finding his truth in the Ishwara and the Shakti, Divine Mother. And that's why Mother says that when you feel there is no longer any difference between Sri Aurobindo and myself, when you realize that oneness, that is the sign. To think of Sri Aurobindo is to think of me, and to think of me is to think of Sri Aurobindo. That is the sign that you are opening to the supramental consciousness. Why? Because this truth is only in the supermind. In the cosmos, there is Brahman and Maya, Purusha and Prakriti. But beyond this transcendence, there is always that one. Automatically, it is something which will happen. See, when you regard no difference, that is the time that you are, it's a sign that you are opening to the supramental. So above the stretch and blaze of cosmic sight, above the silence of the wordless thought, formless creator of immortal forms, nameless, investitude with the name divine, transcending time's hours, transcending timelessness. Because this also they say, okay, all this is okay in time. But sir, there is timeless and eternal. So I ask a question, where did time begin? This is a nutty question. How do you say that time began here? You have to note a time. So time is there. So unmanifest and manifest are simply, he says, time and space are there as just within the one Sachidanand. And then time and space enter into a subjective space and time. So what is subjective space and time? As an author holds the entire book, its chapters in a nutshell within his mind space. So there will be a sequence. So there is the Trikal Darshi, where it's called time eternity, where the entire unfolding is there. Shobindu speaks of it in Records on Yoga, and he writes it as T3. T3 is triple time vision. So, you know, simultaneously, you know the past, the present, the future. Because in that state, the whole picture is there. That's where God can say, picture abhi baki hai dost. Because he knows that picture, he is the author. So in the author has known all this. Then there is the physical time space and other time space. So that's how it is. Because some people say all this is fine, but it's a play in time. But there is something beyond time, there is something beyond manifest. Well, manifest is, the unmanifest is bringing out what is there within it as a potential. But that we'll take up in detail in the next chapter. Next, in Mother's Birthday, 2026. The mighty mother sits in lucent calm and holds the eternal child upon her knees, attending the day when he shall speak to fate. So we have these two aspects. The central being always in the lap of the divine mother, and the psychic being struggling to emerge. And there will be a day when this emergence will be so complete. Speak to fate. What is fate here? That this is the truth you will discover one day. That we are part and parcel of the Divine Mother. We always have been. Though we forgot about it, we went through a long journey, but the Divine Mother never forgot, and that's our hope. There is the image of our future's hope. Future is not all that, are ye ho gaya, somebody died, somebody lived, somebody, God knows, got married, somebody got divorced, somebody had a child. This is not future. Future is already there, prefixed, predetermined, because we are talking about determinants. It's predetermined there. And what is the future? To become one with the divine in every way. There is the sun for which all darkness waits. There is the imperishable harmony. The world's contradictions climb to her and are one. There is the truth of which the world's truths are shreds. The light of which the world's ignorance is the shade. Till truth draws back the shade that it has cast. The love our hearts call down to heal all strife. The bliss for which the world's derelict sorrow yearns. How beautiful. And then one more passage. Quickly, we go back to Savitri. And just it'll come. In 1 minute it'll come. Okay. Okay, so this is the whole journey. He maps out that how this growth of that little spark into the psychic being, why, what is the purpose of it all? Not to go back into the ineffable from where we came. As I said, that would be the most illogical thing, that after all this, go back to that same state. The form deceives, the person is a mask. This is book 1, canto 3. Hid deep in man's celestial powers can dwell, his fragile ship conveys through the sea of years an incognito of the imperishable. Incognito is the soul within us. A spirit that is the flame of God abides, a fiery portion of the wonderful, artist of his own beauty and delight, immortal in our mortal poverty. Just imagine, you have all the riches of the world, you have not found a soul. Poor fellow. That is the only time we can say poor fellow. But somebody who has found a soul, what will he say? Even in rags I am God, fallen I am divine. So that's our story of rags to riches. This sculptor of the forms of the infinite, this screened unrecognized inhabitant, initiate of his own veiled mysteries, hides in a small dumb seed his cosmic thought, in the mute strength of the occult idea, determining predestined shape and act. The story is written. We are just living it out. So we are safe. Everybody is safe. Because the story is written by the mother already. We are just living out, unfolding. Passenger from life to life, from scale to scale, changing his immense self from form to form, he regards the icon growing by his gaze, and in the worm foresees the coming God. Now what happens? That's the interesting part. At last the traveler in the paths of time arrives on the frontiers of eternity. And then in the transient symbol of humanity draped, he feels his substance of undying self and loses his kinship to mortality. A beam of the eternal smites his heart, his thought stretches into infinitude. All in him turns to spirit vastnesses. His soul breaks out to join the oversoul. That's when there is the individual soul becomes a being one with the overmind, one with the gods. It becomes a god among gods, a demigod if you want to put it. It joins the oversoul. His life is oceaned by that super life. It is not destroying, annulling. He has drunk, this is a marvelous line. He has drunk from the breast of the mother of the worlds. What a privilege. He has drunk from the breast of the mother of the worlds. A topless supernature fills his frame. She adopts his spirit's everlasting ground as the security of her changing world and shapes the figure of her unborn might. So that's how the supramental manifests. Immortally she conceives herself in him. In the creature, the unveiled creatrix works. Her face is seen through his face. Her eyes through his eyes. That's the, you know, the physical body itself can. Her being is his through a vast identity. Again, there is no annulment, but fulfillment. This yoga is not for annulment, but for fulfillment. What is the fulfillment? A complete identity of soul and nature with God. Then is revealed in man the over-divine, static oneness and dynamic power. Descend in him the integral Godhead's seals. His soul and body take that splendid stamp. Jema. So we'll meet in February.